Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have four cases being submitted today, two of which will have oral argument and two of which will not. Our panel today, on my right, is Justice Lee Ann Dalton, and my left, Justice Bill Meyer. Call the first case.
The court will now call Paul Kessler and TK Industries versus Melissa and Scott Coleman. May it please the court, we suggest a novel to argue for a point to Mr. William Perkins to argue for appellate.
May it please the court. My name is Jeff Novel. I represent the appellants Paul Kramer and PK Industries, DBA, Castlegate Homes. As the court is aware, the underlying lawsuit that led to this appeal arose from a construction dispute between the Holmans and Mr. Kramer and his company, Castlegate Homes. The jury, after a trial, entered a verdict against Mr. Kramer and against Castlegate Homes, and the court ultimately entered a judgment against both Mr. Kramer and Castlegate Homes. That judgment was the result of some abuses of discretion on behalf of the court with regard to specific evidentiary issues, and was also the result of findings of fact which were not sufficiently supported either legally or factually in the jury's charge. Although we've raised numerous issues in our appeal, there are four primary points I'm going to address today. First is that the DTPA claim on which the Holmans elected to recover is both legally and factually insufficient. The second is that the warranty claim against Mr. Paul Kramer is factually insufficient. The third point that I will address is that the Holmans' claims against Kramer is legally insufficient in that they are barred by the statute of limitations. And the fourth point that I will address is that the court abused its discretion with regard to evidentiary rulings in relation to the expert testimony from the plaintiff's expert on constructional defects, Mr. Ahuja. There is a breach. What that would do with regard to Mr. Kramer is if the DTPA claim is overturned, the only recovery would be a breach of contract award in favor of PK Industries DBA Castlegate Homes. There's still a warranty issue with regard to Mr. Kramer. I believe that there is also factually insufficient evidence to support a warranty finding, which would make the DTPA claim based upon that finding factually insufficient. Now, you touched on my first point with regard to puffery. As the court, I'm sure, noticed in our briefing, there were five or six statements by Mr. Kramer that he made in the course and scope of his duties as a representative of PK Industry that are at issue in this lawsuit. These statements are all very similar to one another. The ones that are addressed in our brief are that the home that Mr. Kramer built and that his company built for the Holmans would be a magnificent home with a quality level rarely seen in Tarrant County. The second is that it would be one of the finest homes in the city. He also made statements that it would be a wonderful home, a great home, a really great home, and a kick-butt home. Now, when courts are reviewing whether statements are puffery or opinion, there are three factors that are to be considered. The first is the precision of the statements that are made. The second is the knowledge on the topics that are being addressed as between the buyer and a seller. And then the third is whether statements relate to a past or future condition. Now, all of the statements that are at issue in this lawsuit are insufficient to support a DTPA claim because they're simply too imprecise, too vague to really even know what they mean in the context of describing a home. What does it mean for a home to be magnificent, great, really great? It is hard to determine with precision what Mr. Kramer meant when he made those statements. Now, generally, statements that compare one product to another and claim superiority are not actionable representations. That comes out of Shaw Equipment Company v. Hoople Jordan Construction Company. All of the statements here, when you look at them, are simply one measure of comparing the to-be-constructed home for the Hallmans to other homes within the city. In comparison to those other homes, it would be great, magnificent, its quality would be better. Those are the type of imprecise statements, the type of comparison statements that cannot support a DTPA claim. With regard to the knowledge between the buyer and the seller, on these specific topics that are addressed, whether the home would be great or wonderful, I would submit that the knowledge of the parties is equal with respect to these topics. Now, if we're measuring whether Mr. Kramer knows more about the building of a home than the Hallmans, I don't believe there's any dispute that Mr. Kramer does. But on these specific topics, the ability to judge those topics is not colored by the varying knowledge between the parties. Now, with regard to the last point, whether the statements relate to a past or present condition, all of these statements were in the context of a home that was yet to be constructed. These were what Mr. Kramer and PK Industries hoped to build, a magnificent home for the Hallmans. The Texas courts find that a future event is to be judged differently than a then existing condition. In their response brief, the appellees note that, or try to make the argument, that a residential construction is not a work of art. It is something that can be judged with specificity, and the quality of it can be determined very easily. Well, the context of that case does not apply here. It was the Helms v. Kingston case, which they cited in their brief. But Helms v. Kingston related to the sale of then-existing homes. It was then-existing residential units. When the statements were made that those residential units were excellently constructed, there was a very easy way to determine whether or not the construction was excellent. You could go and look at those units and make that determination with objectively verifiable inspection. That isn't the case here. This is a yet-to-be-constructed home, and the statements that Mr. Kramer made are too vague, too imprecise, and they're about a future event. They're simply not the type of statements that properly support a DTPA claim. Now, the second item that I'll address... Yes?
It's novel.
I believe that it is a service.
And how many times does one have to comment on the quality of the service to be provided before things that might be a gauge of future conduct or future performance moves from being puffery to being a practice in practice?
I believe your question addresses the number of times, and I don't believe there's a magic number of times. I believe it could be, you could make one comment, and if it's the phrased incorrectly or if it is making a representation that is wholly incorrect, then that is enough. At the same time, I believe you can have numerous representations that are opinion and puffery that don't get over the hurdle of a representation for purposes of... I don't believe repetitive volume is going to be the standard by which to determine whether or not a statement is improper. Thank you.
Are you trying to connect your puffery argument somehow to the warranty?
Well, I believe that to the extent that, and I don't believe that there's a direct connection, because I think the same statements weren't the basis of a warranty claim.
Then tell me, what is your understanding of the basis?
My understanding is that there was an express warranty that is set forth in the contractual languages. It was part of the benefit of the bargain between the parties, and that there was also a good warranty of performance of the work in a good and workmanlike manner. And with respect to Mr. Kramer, there are not facts sufficient to support a judgment against him on a warranty claim. With regard to the express warranty, there has to be a representation or a warranty that is part of the benefit of the bargain. I don't believe that the evidence shows that there was a warranty by Mr. Kramer. It wasn't part of the benefit of the bargain that the house was going to be an excellent house, that it was going to be a fantastic house. That's just simply not part of the warranty that was from Kramer. Now, with regard to PK Industries, PK Industries was the party that entered into the contract with the appellees. PK Industries was the party through which Mr. Kramer made his representations. But PK Industries was the party that had that contract for purposes and derived a benefit of the bargain for purposes of a warranty claim from the Hallmans. And then with regard to the warranty of good and workmanlike performance, Mr. Kramer didn't perform the construction. The construction was carried out and the work was carried out by PK Industries doing business as Castlegate Homes. So with regard to the warranty of good and workmanlike performance, again, with respect to Mr. Kramer, there was not a warranty that he provided because there was not a warranty, an express warranty, nor a warranty of good and workmanlike performance from Mr. Kramer. There cannot be. There's factually insufficient to have a finding against him on a warranty claim. Moving on to my third point, the statute of limitations. The timeline in this case speaks volumes about the statute of limitations issues with regard to Mr. Kramer. Correct. Mr. Kramer did not, but the with regard to the pleading, his pleading, and I'm sure as you glean. Correct, Your Honor, it did not. And I'm sure as you glean from reading through the briefing and the record, Mr. Kramer appeared pro se with regard to his representation himself in this case. And I know there's no different standard, and I know I'm aware of that and the court's aware of that. But if the allegations in this case were that Mr. Kramer was in fact the alter ego of PK Industries, that they were one and the same, PK Industries in its pleadings had asserted statute of limitations. It was not a request for a finding of fact with regard to limitations. But I don't believe that constitutes a waiver in this matter, because where there is a definitive establishment of the date from which the statute of limitations begins to run, there need not be a finding by the jury. The pleading, I grant you the pleading is an issue, but the alter ego of Mr. Kramer, or the purported alter ego of Mr. Kramer, did plead a statute of limitations defense, and I believe. The appellees asserted that Mr. Kramer and PK Industries were indistinguishable for purposes of this lawsuit, that all of the acts of Mr. Kramer were PK Industries, all of the acts of PK Industries. It was not submitted. Well, I believe that the limitations defense that was asserted by PK Industries can also be applied to Mr. Kramer by virtue of the fact that if they are alter egos of one another, the pleading was out there. That's correct. Now that brings me to my last point, which was that the trial court abused its discretion with regard to evidentiary rulings related to Mr. Ahuja. As the court's aware, Mr. Ahuja was the Hallman's expert with regard to the structural defects and the cost of repair that was the foundation for the damage model put forth by the Hallman's. I was not.
Mr. Kramer or whoever was asked if he had any further questions after the lunch break. He said no. Also, there's no record of what questions that he would have liked to have asked that he was unable to. So with that, where are we?
I think the problem was when he's asked after the lunch break if he has further questions, the sequencing was a little bit different from my recollection on that. I believe Mr. Kramer was mid-question and the court said, okay, Mr. Green, and that was, in fact, the trial counsel that was representing PK Industries. Mr. Kramer was cut off. The judge had already indicated that she was going to cut him short shortly after the lunch break, And you know, he did he was working his way through the damage model that Mr. Ahuja had put forward, and I believe there is a sufficient showing in the record as to where the questions were going as he moved forward.
You know, you need to make a bid. You know that. I know that. The
Under Rule 103, he needs to make he needs to preserve his error unless it is it is apparent from the record what type of error he's trying to preserve or the evidence that he intends to introduce. Now, I believe from the record it is clear that he was working his way through the damage model, and that were those were the types of questions that he was intending to introduce and cross-examine them.
I don't recall, and I think you were correct, from the briefing where you pointed to the record and attempted to explain what you just told me, that the members of the court will look at the record on page 70 to 76, you will see that he was working through Exhibit 6 when it was cut off, and therefore had finished the exhibit that year before the completion of damage. But I don't remember any discussion of that.
I believe you're correct. That specific point was not addressed.
All right. Okay.
Now, with... Well, I think that's going to vary based on the witness. This particular witness was the key expert for the Hallmans. He had prepared a several inches thick report and damage model that went through in a lot of detail the various damages and issues with the home. And I believe the opportunity to work through that damage model and to poke holes through on that damage model on cross-examination is enough time. And I don't believe Mr. Kramer was given that opportunity. I believe the total amount of time was in the 3 to 4 hour range. That's correct. That my understanding of the afternoon move forward was that it was less than 2 hours.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't have a precise number for you. And then that brings me to my final issue. Yes. Thank you for your time.
And let's give Mr. Kirkman an extra 3 minutes. Kirkman, it would be good, I think, if you start off talking about puffery and then move into warning.
That I will. May it please the court, to answer your question, it makes no difference. Because there was a warranty finding against Mr. Kramer, which I believe is special question number 6. 6 and 7 were both questions that were posed as to Mr. Kramer. I believe 6 is warranty, 7 is the Deceptive Trade Practice Act, and then, of course, 11 was the damage question that was tied to both those. So, to answer your question directly, even if this court were to determine it were puffery and somehow say that the special question number 6 about the DTPA was not appropriate, there was a warranty finding against Mr. Kramer as set out in 6. Now, to talk about the warranty question, if I believe that's where you wanted me to go next. If the court would have an opportunity to look at question 6 that Judge Sutter posed, which is number 11, I think, in the appendix, the question was, was the failure, if any, of Paul Kramer to comply with a warranty producing cause of damages? And then, of course, the judge defined producing cause and failure to comply with a warranty. I think it is critical when you look at numbers 1 and 2 that there were separate warranties the court found and instructed the jury on. Of course, number 1 is the good and workmanlike manner, which I'm sure this court is very familiar with. The second is an express warranty, and I would respectfully submit to the court that the record is replete with statements by Mr. Kramer that constituted an express warranty under that definition within question number 6-2.
Are these the same representations that we discussed whether or not they're appropriate?
No, they're not. An independent, for example... No, because that really wasn't posed by the appellant in its argument. I can tell you what they were, because I have a recollection of them when I tried them. He said, we will repair this to your satisfaction. We will repair this to as good as new. Things to that effect, which were warranties, which the jury found were breached, and which the court, which fit within the court's definition of a warranty. Depends on how you define incident. They happened all through the building of the house. This was a disaster from the start, all through the process. Mr. Kramer said, I'll fix this. I guarantee I'll fix this. This will be repaired. Then he didn't. Then he set them again. Then he set them again. And he set them after the house was occupied. It was a continuum of warranties,
right, well,
Mr. Kramer. No, Mr. Kramer did perform a number of services. Mr. Kramer performed a number of express warranties and representations in his letters. There's
I know that, but it's failure to perform services and really working like that. So I guess what I'm asking you is what services did Mr. Kramer perform simply in the part if we don't have an alter ego family from the whole building business?
Well, I guess to answer that question, Mr. Kramer performed services individually in repairing the home. All of the promises he made, all of the work he did, he sent on individual letterhead. Now, Castlegate Homes was the name of PK Industries, which is the name of the contracting entity. But the promises to repair the work, and a number of the repair work was performed by Mr. Kramer individually according to the letters that were sent. So we've got separate findings of puffery, as the appellant would call them, which I would disagree with what they're characterized to be. They're representations of fact, failure to comply with promises. And I think the cases that we cite in our brief, I think that argument is on page 28 of my reply brief that talks about exactly what the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals define as puffery. I think the Otto House case, the Supreme Court specifically discussed what is and what isn't puffery. And in those cases cited on page 29, I think the court will conclude that the representations that are addressed in the brief are not puffery, according to the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals cases that are referenced therein. So, we move on to what I understand to be his third argument, which is the statute of limitations. No pleading, no issue requested, tried by consent. I don't know how more clear it could be that statute of limitations without some jury finding or pleading to support that claim cannot be the subject of this opinion. As a matter of practice, the position we took was that each time Mr. Kramer made representations, and I emphasize Mr. Kramer, not PK Industries, that this is repaired, this is fixed, you won't have any more problems, no more leakage, it was our position, supported by case law, that started the statute to run again, as we set out in our brief. But more importantly, to this court, in examining the record, without any pleading, without any objections at trial, without any evidence to support, and without a specific submission of a question, I don't think as a matter of law they have the right to raise statute of limitations at this point based on the record. Now, the construction defect argument, as I understand, it really there's a couple of facets to it. Counsel for the appellants, as I understood his last argument, complained about him being, quote, cut off, end quote, after extensive cross-examination of the expert, which is all throughout the record. And I do think that the court has seized upon what is really the critical aspect of that argument, is after continually repeating questions, after continually being warned and admonished not to do that, the judge finally said, you're done. At which time, counsel for PK Industries took over the questioning. I then had a few redirect, and then he was given the opportunity, that is, Mr. Kramer was given the opportunity to ask more questions, to which he said, no further questions. Thank you, Your Honor. There is no bill made. All discussions concerning that point were conversations at the bench. We don't know what exactly he intended to prove after a lengthy examination of the expert. There was no proper record made to preserve that error. And while I understand that the right of cross-examination is very, very dear to lawyers' hearts, there comes a time when a court must exercise its discretion and say, enough is enough. You can't continue to badger the witness and ask repetitive questions. And again, the solution to that entire process was, when he went back and had other questions, the judge asked him if he had them, and he said, no further questions. So, we have a judgment that I believe is valid. It should be affirmed. It should be affirmed as to both PK Industries and Paul Kramer. There were separate issues submitted. This case was not tried on an alter ego theory. This case was a separate submission as to Paul Kramer's individual liability based on absolutely clear law in Texas that when one makes statements, when one makes representations, when one makes warranties, he makes them both in his individual and representative capacity. That's what the jury found when they made those findings against Mr. Kramer. And we would respectfully submit that this court affirm the judgment of the trial court.
In the law, he knows a few friends that are lawyers, and he had a young associate who assisted his company with respect to defending PK Industries. His training in the law is limited to some internet searches, but I don't believe that that is discussed in the record.
He didn't have a law degree, and he wasn't involved in any way with the law other than representing himself pro se in this case.
No, that's correct. That's correct. The two issues that I just want to briefly go back to are the warranty issue, and the claim from Appelese is that Mr. Kramer individually made these warranties. And with regard to the specific warranties that are that the jury was charged on, that cannot be the case. The first is the good and workmanlike manner. The work was solely being performed by PK Industries. Mr. Kramer was not out there performing the work individually, and he simply cannot be an individual that can offer a warranty of performance of a good and workmanlike matter. With regard to the express warranty, which was the only other warranty that the jury was charged on, again, that warranty has to derive out of some sort of contractual benefit of the bargain situation. That did not happen as to Mr. Kramer in this matter. It was the only contracts, there are two contracts that were in the appellant's appendix, and the two contracts that were at issue in this case were a design agreement and then a construction agreement. Both of those contracts are between PK Industries and the Hallmans. There's simply no evidence on which a warranty claim against Mr. Kramer can be based. Now, going back to the puffery issue, and you asked initially, what does it mean if we simply find that there's puffery, and this case gets kicked back down to the trial court? I agree with the Appellee's counsel that simply finding that there's puffery does not eliminate the warranty issue. But given the issues with the warranty claim and the fact that it should not have been entered against Mr. Kramer, and then the fact that the DTPA claim, the portion of the DTPA claim based on representations, contained is full of inadequate representations that are opinion and puffery, The combination of those two issues means that the only claim that stands with respect to Paul Kramer, or there's no claims that stand with respect to Paul Kramer, if this court follows along with the warranty and other DTPA arguments put forward by Mr. Kramer.
If I understand what you're saying about the express warranty, you're saying that the warranty has to be based on the contract, and so there was no contract with Mr. Kramer, he couldn't make a warranty that he subject to a breach.
That is correct. What I'm saying is that with regard to an express warranty, an express warranty is part of the basis of a bargain, and it's contractual in nature. That's out of the Business and Commerce Code, Section 2.313A. And an express warranty is the result of a negotiated exchange. There's no evidence that a negotiated exchange took place between the Hallmans and Mr. Kramer. What we have is a negotiated exchange between PK Industries and the Hallmans. And that negotiated change between those two entities is not sufficient to extend a warranty finding against Mr. Kramer. And with that, I'll conclude.
I have a further question.
Sure.
I hesitate to ask because it's nothing in the brief about it, but I didn't see anything where you were raising an issue about at the charge conference where you had issues that you wanted submitted or Mr. Kramer had issues that he wanted submitted that the court denied, didn't submit. So there weren't any issues about Kramer's status in terms of his being involved in the process as something more than just a representative or officer of PK Industries. There wasn't any findings of the jury. There weren't any requests.
That's correct.
All right. That's correct.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to get down a little unusual, but I'm going to ask opposing counsel to respond to the argument that because there was no contract between the Kramer and the homeowners, there couldn't be an express warranty that would be subject to breach based on the not based on the contract.
It is my recollection that that was not briefed, so I'm sort of shooting from the hip, if the court will please. However, I believe that there were multiple expressions in writing by Mr. Kramer that could be construed by a jury as a breach of warranty. Now, if the question is, does it have to relate to the contract? No. Paul Kramer made individual expressions of warranty to the Hallmans as to repair matters. For instance, I will repair this. I will make this good. Which I don't think one can construe other than it is an individual warranty expressed by Mr. Kramer. It wasn't PK will make this good. And again, I don't know that this specific subject was briefed, so I do apologize. I'm shooting.
Let's suppose that you will give us a letter brief on this rifle shot point, and that you need to contract the basis for warranty, and you'll have it to us by how about next week? At which time you will also have copies of the person who will then have until a week from Friday to respond if you wish to.
Okay.
Okay. So next Monday for the appellant and a week from Friday for the appellant.
May I indulge the court to make sure that I understand the issue?
The issue is, do you have to have a contract that is the basis of a warranty, and if so, what contract was it?
Okay. Very good.
All right, thank you. I believe I was incorrect, and I said we had two oral arguments today. In fact, we only had one oral argument. So I believe the business of the court in the courtroom has concluded, and we are adjourned.